it's been some time since National Interest talked about strategic issues, foreign policy issues, and what's happening in India's relationship with the world. That's because we've been so caught up in our own politics and also this wretched pandemic and the virus. But now is a very good opportunity and very good time, a good juncture for us to look at some of those issues. And why is the timing so good now? Because next week will begin with the arrival of two senior most or most powerful American cabinet officers. That is Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Secretary of Defense Mark Esper. Now, both of them are coming into India for what is called as 2+2 dialogue. This is a continuing dialogue between the two countries. 2+2 means the defense and foreign ministers from respective sides meet and then make a review of the strategic relationship so far and set course for the future. So you might say, look, India and America have had a honeymoon in their relationship for quite some time now. What is the big deal? It's one more meeting. And 2+2 is also an ongoing process. And it's true that barring some niggles on the trade front from Harley Davidson to the rest, chicken legs, the fact is that on the larger strategic issue, the two nations have moved quite smoothly in their partnership. But the important thing is the timing. And why do we say so? Timing because when these talks begin on Monday, conclude on Tuesday, that will be exactly a week before Americans back home go to vote either to re-elect Trump or elect a new president. In fact, if you look at the odds in all the opinion polls, they've been wrong in the past. But if you look at the odds are that the likelihood of Donald Trump not getting re-elected is higher than getting elected. Yet, his two senior most cabinet officers have taken time off to fly all the way. These are not virtual meetings. Flying all the way from Washington to India in spite of the pandemic and the virus. That means very high priority is being accorded to this contact. The second thing is, this is also an acknowledgement of the fact that while these are unusual times and there is the Chinese threat and all that, and I will talk about that, it's also true that the ties between India and the US or the outreach to India or the strategic partnership with India is one of the very few things on which both candidates in the US presidential election agree. In fact, I don't think there is any other issue except the partnership with India, strategic partnership with India, on which that bipartisanship is so strong even in these highly polarized times in American politics. You might say hostility to China or fear of China, that's also true. But again, there will be differences there on how to deal with China. And each side, each candidate will accuse the other of not being tough enough on China. But on India, I think that even that difference of opinion does not exist. And all the polls in America are now telling us that 72% people of Indian origin will vote for Biden. And then if he gets elected, that means if there is a change, then his vice president will be of Indian origin or partly Indian origin. And if Trump comes back, then this continuity goes on. So that's why it is not the political change risk is not there for these two, for Pompeo and Esper, as they come into India. Now, what is the urgency still? This could be done a few weeks later. Or India has a very cautious, very conservative foreign policy establishment. Not as cautious and conservative as it used to be, but still cautious and conservative. And they could have said, look, what is lost? You can do it a few weeks later. You will know the results. And if you know that Trump will not continue as president, then engage with the other side. Why irritate the other side? Now, first of all, you know, once you are convinced of the bipartisanship on this, you are not afraid of irritating the other side. The second thing is, there is a sense of urgency right now. And the sense of urgency is not just because Chinese are sitting on this six-month dharna in Ladakh and refusing to go away, but it's also because what is an immediate concern for India, a territorial or neighborhood concern, is also a much larger strategic concern for America. Because the Chinese may be sitting on our borders, because we are next door neighbors, we have land borders, long land borders with China. But they are pushing all of America's friends and larger democracies in this region. So they are pushing Japan, they are pushing Australia, they are pushing India, and the entire Five Eyes Alliance, as it's called, including Canada. So Canada, Australia, New Zealand, UK, all of them feel threatened by China. All of them are taking actions to keep Chinese technologies out, to keep Chinese digital interventions out. Australia has already announced a long-term military plan, increasing its defense budget. Japan's already been proactive. That's the reason now Australia is back in Quad. They've dropped their hesitations and India has dropped its hesitations. So America's interests are being threatened by China. America is not coming in to protect India. In fact, the logic would have been that, look, if the Chinese are pushing India on the LAC, India is quite capable, if it comes to trading punches on the LAC, India is quite capable of taking care of itself, which is true. But America's concern is a larger one, because they see now China as a threat, and China is now threatening all their allies and friends. In this process, the Quad is an important move, and for Quad to happen, India and Indian Navy and Indian Armed Forces have a key role there. Now, these four are the most immediately concerned about China. In fact, in my more facetious moments, which come often, I say that Quad should actually be renamed Chin Pidit Samaj, the Society of Nations Aggrieved by China. It doesn't quite have the same ring as Chin Pidit Samaj in Hindi. But look at the strategic picture around China. To China's west, you have from India, then you go towards the Arab world. Now, Arab world is watching in great concern China's ties with Iran. They don't say so. They keep their own relationship with China intact, but they worry about Chinese-Iranian relationship. Then they also see that Pakistan is pretty much a client state of China, large Islamic state with nuclear weapons. China actually is a peculiar power now. It has two nuclear weapon countries, in fact, two relatively unpredictable at different levels. One is more unpredictable than the other, that is North Korea. But North Korea and Pakistan, two unpredictable nuclear weapon states as its protectorate, not as allies, as its protectorates. Then if you look at it from the Arab point of view, they also see Pakistani outreach to Turkey. Turkey is at odds with them in the Sunni universe. Now, Pakistani outreach to Turkey is so strong, and I would say so brazen, and at some level a little bit recklessly arrogant, that Pakistanis have even had their foreign minister to say rude things about Saudi Arabia in public. Because it does look like Imran Khan is leaning towards Turkey. Now, Imran Khan leans towards Turkey. He's a close ally, in fact, a protectorate or a client state of China. China and Iran have this relationship. Iran is doing what it's doing in the region. In all that situation, in all that complication, knowing that the Arabs, the Gulf states, are also American allies, this becomes a much larger strategic challenge for America as well. And that's why everybody is here. In fact, barring these two client states of China, the only other solid ally that China has right now is Russia. Because Russia now is the most reliable supplier of energy to China. It has given China quite a bit of protection from the fear that the Chinese always have about Malacca Straits. What happens if somebody blocks it and energy, that is petroleum, crude oil, stops coming in from there? Russia has pipelines and things. With Russia and China, there's a long land border, and it suits Russia because this is Russia's primary export, minerals. And also, Russia is a big military supplier to China. Now, Russia has what China doesn't have, which is modern military technology. Russia also has an industrial base to produce that. What China has, on the other hand, is a large military with a hunger for modern technology and weaponry, and also the money to buy that. So a very unusual military industrial complex is coming to place now, where the industry is Russia's and the military is China's. Now, when you see that relationship growing and becoming thicker and thicker, and nobody is missing it, the Americans are not missing it, because they now see there are only two defined adversaries, although at different levels, now quite close together, symbiotically so. And India also sees, India is not sitting here with its eyes shut, India also sees that Indian Air Force, for example, right now operating in Ladakh, has to keep at the back of its mind that this is an airspace where they have to presume that Russian-made S-300s and also S-400 missiles are present, because the Chinese PLA Air Force is operating both of those missile systems. India's first S-400s will become operational sometime in 2022. That tells you how deep the Russian-Chinese military cooperation is now, and it looks like this is only going to grow. So this is where everybody's interests are now converging. So we go back to Goswami Tulsidas's Ramcharitmanas, in which he quotes Lord Ram. I think he gets exasperated about somebody not listening, and he gives a discourse in which he says there is no point arguing with somebody who's stupid, there's no point lecturing somebody who is arrogant, etc., etc. And then he says, that's when you have to use fear or strength to strike fear in the other one's heart to get your outcome. And there he uses that line, bin bhai hoth na preet, that unless they fear you, nobody loves you. Now, you can also reverse it. This was said in the sense of power projection at that point. Lord Ram was God. But it also works in reverse, which means when you fear people, or when you fear another nation or another power, it also makes you love those who share the common fear. And that is what is bringing these countries together. That's why the Quad, that's why I call Quad a Cheen Pidit Samaj. So that fear is now, the fear of China is bringing them all together, and that's the reason, in spite of the politically fluid situation, these two are coming into India at this time and holding these discussions. So this is a case of a logic of Bhai Bin Hoth Na Preet driving India, America, Australia, Japan, and many others. Some can afford to speak, some cannot afford to speak because they are too weak to speak. But you can see in Europe now, even a country like Sweden is striking back at China. They are all trying to keep Chinese technologies, particularly Chinese digital footprint, out of their countries. That is the changed new world now. Now, what is it that it changes in India? I rely on my readings. As I read up, I pick up wisdom from people. My readings from two Indian strategic scholars. One is C. Rajamohan, who writes his column in the Indian Express. He's a friend of mine. And second is a much younger scholar, that is Dhruva Jaishankar, who runs the ORF, Observer Research Foundation unit in America. Now, C. Rajamohan, in his column, Raja Mandala, in the Indian Express on August 25, he discusses the idea of strategic autonomy, because I know that when this Indo-US strategic alliance rises to its true potential, as it is doing now, because it's military also now, then there will be a criticism from a lot of people in India saying that India is giving up its strategic autonomy. At the same time, many people would want, if there's a Five Eyes alliance in which America, Britain, Canada, New Zealand, Australia share all their intelligence, it's a powerful alliance, why is India not part of it? For India to be part of it, even theoretically, India has to become an ally, which means your definition of strategic autonomy has to change. So Rajamohan in this article very pithily explains the difference between the past and now. He says after the Cold War ended and a unipolar world came into being, that unipolar world was dominated by America. So India's concern was that India should have strategic autonomy from America. Now this was also a period when Bill Clinton had two presidencies. Now Clinton II was better for India than Clinton I. Clinton I was a disaster. Yet in the Clinton White House and in his establishment, there was a belief, they bought into the idea that South Asia is a nuclear flashpoint, that India-Pakistan equation is the most dangerous thing in the world. And finally, the fantasy that with their intervention, they can bring about a resolution between India and Pakistan of the Kashmir problem. As long as that continued, India was afraid of American pressures taking away India's strategic autonomy. So India and America did not move too close together. They came closer, but not they did not realize the potential that existed in their relationship. It is after that, when other presidents came, Bush Jr. and then Obama and now Trump, that India and Pakistan got truly hyphenated, dehyphenated in the American worldview. It is also then that China began to rise in its power. And it's over the past 3 or 4 years that China has begun to throw its weight around. Because until then, India was trying to balance its equation with China. About two, three years back, it became evident increasingly that it was not going to happen. And over the last year or so, in fact, I'd say beginning with Doklam, that was 3 years ago, it's been evident that China wants something else. That China wants you to acknowledge that they are the preeminent power here. So that has now redefined India's strategic autonomy, the concept of strategic autonomy. So earlier, it was autonomy from America, that means from the one preeminent global power. Now it is autonomy from a China that is threatening our territorial integrity, our sovereignty, and also our preeminence in our region. Now, those are elements that define India's larger national interest, supreme national interest. And if that is threatened, then strategic autonomy now lies in going and tying up with those who might be on your side or those who might have the same apprehensions as you. So that debate has now been settled. Dhruva Jaishankar, on the other hand, says, this is an interview that he has done with First Post, where he says the time for Talmudic debates on India's strategic autonomy are over now. Talmudic debates are something that comes from Jewish tradition, when they endlessly debate what the Talmud's scriptures mean. Now, you might have once quibbled with Dhruva that he used something from the Jewish tradition, but not from Vedic tradition, like Shastrarth. Nevertheless, the point he makes is a good one, which is that strategic autonomy means country should be able to act as it wishes in its larger strategic interest. And that is what India is doing now. Is India giving up on something? Look, and I say it at the risk of angering the many fans of Nehru and Indira Gandhi, that even under them, while the pretense was non-alignment, India was rarely a non-aligned country. After the debacle in 1962, Nehru had chosen America. In fact, the Americans had a military mission in Delhi led by a general, by a two-star general. It's just that by the time that happened, Nehru was too weak physically, morally, politically, and he was going steeply downhill. So that did not go forward, did not acquire momentum. Indira Gandhi, on the other hand, from after 67, 68, realized that given how close America and Pakistan were becoming again, she needed allies. And between 1969 to 77, and then 1980 to 84, in those Indira Gandhi governments, India was not effectively a non-aligned country. It was aligned with the Soviet Union. Look at India's voting record. at the UN, for example, and look at the Treaty of Peace, Friendship and Cooperation, as it was called in 1971. So, once again, I'm not judging them for having done what they did. They were smart people. They did this in the larger national interest. What's happening right now is also happening in the larger national interest.